ஓம ஜானத்தின் அஸ்ய ஞானம் ஜன ஷலாக சக்ஷூரு நீலி தாம் ஏன தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குரு
I'm supposed to give a lecture now. The whole purpose of the lecture is to encourage people to chant Hare Krishna, but we already did that. So maybe I'll speak a bit about why we should go on chanting Hare Krishna. I was asked to give a lecture on Vedic philosophy, is that right? Philosophy, this is derived, this English term, how do you say in Bosnia?
Same word,
philosophy. It's derived from the Greek, which means love of truth. And the word Vedic is derived from the Sanskrit word Veda, which means knowledge. So there are many philosophies in the world, but most of them are simply different people's speculations or imaginations. But Vedic philosophy means definitive knowledge of the absolute truth. Vedic philosophers are concerned with reality. We want that which is real, isn't it? And this whole material existence is simply artificial, especially in the modern age. We are encouraged to lead a very artificial kind of life. I mean, apart from electricity and microphones and all these things which are artificial. But the whole aim of life is artificial. Modern society promotes that we should get lots of material possessions and lots of money and enjoy them. And our role models are rock stars, cinema stars, sports stars, TV stars, and other varieties of fools. All foolish people who have no idea what the goal of life is. Everyone comes into this world, they're born screaming and naked. And most people leave it also screaming, but just with clothes on. At birth, the child passes stool and urine, and at death, they also pass stool and urine. Most people simply live and die like animals. You see, the animals are born, and they're simply concerned, where is some food? Where is shelter? Where is sex? And they don't. So most human beings also, for all their so-called sophistication and supposed to be more intelligent, they simply get born, live, pass stool and urine, and die. They don't know what the purpose of life is. And especially in modern society, there is no consciousness or no awareness of that there is any higher purpose of life. You simply make the goal of life to live and die, and that's all. So naturally people are frustrated. We see most people in the modern age are frustrated. Well, that's a good sign, because the way people lead their lives, they should be frustrated. Apparently the World Health Organization released some figures recently that say that 70% of people aged under 20 in developed countries are psychologically imbalanced, which is not surprising, because the whole society is completely insane. And if the whole society is completely insane, it's not surprising that people become insane. The Vedic literatures describe that every living being is a spirit soul, whose original position is one of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Every living being is meant to be superlatively happy. But in material existence, we are simply suffering repeated birth and death. The human form of life is an opportunity to develop our spiritual intelligence and get free from birth and death. Go to the spiritual world to live with Krishna eternally in spiritual bliss. So human life is particularly meant for developing this consciousness. And in the Vedic culture, which means the civilization based upon Vedic philosophy, that was previously widely practiced and is still somewhat practiced in India. The goal of life was to understand God, means to understand Krishna, to act in that relationship, to develop love of Krishna, and to prepare oneself for becoming free from the repeated birth and death. Now, modern society has practically extinguished these higher goals of life, and therefore people are increasingly frustrated. They're offering, they're advertising that you should purchase so many things, but this simply leads to frustration, because even if you get these things, you're not happy. And if you do get them, you're frustrated because they don't give the happiness that is advertised. And if you don't get them, then you're also frustrated because you think you should be. So either way, the materialistic goal of life simply leads to frustration. And to offset their frustration, people often take to intoxication, or maybe they suffer depression or suicide, or maybe they indulge in unnecessary vicious violence. These are all symptoms of an imbalanced and insane society. So Vedic philosophy is being preached all over the world to give people clear knowledge of what is the goal of life and how to attain. That this material existence is not actual reality. Reality is not simply getting born and dying with nothing of any particular importance in between. Reality means to understand that we are all spiritual living beings. Before this body existed, I existed. And after this body passes away, I will continue to exist. Therefore, to place all my hopes centered on this body is foolish. Even if we live to be 120 years old, which isn't very likely, it's only a flash in time. So actually, human life is very short, and it can be taken away at any time, as you probably know well, living in this country, where many people lost their lives just like that. One bullet and they're finished.
Yeah,
one little bit of metal. So one should be serious to know what the purpose of life is. Who am I? Who is God? What is our relationship? So this is all described in the Vedic philosophy. Not simply someone's made-up philosophy, but it is the definitive knowledge of the Absolute Truth. It is given by God Himself. God has many names. The supreme name is Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. Whatever attraction we are looking for in this material world is only a dim reflection of the original attraction that is Krishna. Krishna is all powerful, that is accepted in all religious cultures, that God is all powerful. He's also all beautiful, all knowledgeable, supremely famous, very opulent, and in all ways possessed the superlative qualities that only God can possess. Now, generally, it's under in all religious cultures, it's understood that God is all powerful and all merciful. But generally, it's thought when it's said that God is all merciful, it's considered that the symptom of God's mercy is that He will help me to enjoy my life more. Or sometimes there is the idea that God will bless me and I will go to heaven. And there, by God's mercy, I will enjoy myself very much. This is not a very developed concept of God. Real knowledge of God means to know Him in His full sweetness and beauty and love. God is not simply someone who gives us facilities to enjoy our material senses. It's just like the government may provide money to unemployed people. So God is more than some cosmic government who doles out supplies to poor people. The Vedic knowledge reveals that God is the supreme person and that the highest goal of life is to love God. In this material world, we are trying to love, but love inevitably leads to frustration. Even if we do love someone throughout our lives, which isn't very common in the modern age, divorce is more common. But even if you do supposedly love someone, then that love is frustrated by death. But even what we call love in this material world is simply an arrangement for mutual sense gratification. For instance, we often find that men fall in love with beautiful young women. We don't find that they fall in love with old women. They say, I love you, but actually it's an attraction to the body. It's not actual person-to-person or soul-to-soul, but it's a desire to enjoy the body. So this love in the material world, it is based on personal sense enjoyment. Therefore, it can never actually satisfy the soul, because the real need for the soul is to actually love. Actual love means to fully give oneself to another person who will fully reciprocate. But in this material world, no one can fully reciprocate love because they're not competent to do so. Therefore, God is understood to be the supreme lover, the real person who can reciprocate our love. Generally, when we talk of love of God, we think of some fuzzy kind of feeling for some distant, vague entity. But actual love of God means to enter into a deep relationship with the person who is more important to us than any other person. God is a person. He is the supreme lover and the supreme friend. When we say God is a person, that's not simply some theoretical or analogical idea. That means that God, Krishna, is a person who we can laugh with, play with, joke with, eat with. Of course, these are very elevated stages of God realization. In the beginning, we have to develop our feelings of service. One has to be highly qualified to enter into pure love of God. So Krishna consciousness or the Vedic philosophy teaches us to develop a service attitude for God. This will purify us. All of us in the material world, we are impure. By nature, as spiritual beings, we are pure. But having come to the material world, we are infected with inferior qualities, such as lust, greed, anger, delusion. envy, and so on. So the Vedic philosophy is not simply a theoretical philosophy, but it teaches us practically how to become purified. It teaches us what is the goal of life and how to attain. The goal of life is to understand God in fullness and to surrender our existence to Him. And the process of doing that is called bhakti yoga. Yoga means a linking process. It's not simply some exercise. The yogic exercises are one part of an inferior system of yoga that has nothing to do with devotion to the Supreme Lord. But real yoga, or the highest yoga, means to develop devotion to Krishna. So the process for doing this is very practical. Actually, in previous ages, it wouldn't be possible for all of us to even take up this process. When I say previous ages, this is based on the understanding given in the Vedic literature that the civilized life has been on this planet and on all the other planets since time immemorial, since the creation. According to modern theories, modern man, Homo sapiens, came into existence. What do they say now? They keep on changing their theories. What's the latest? 2 million years ago? No? 2 million, that's the latest. So the latest theory is 2 million years ago, although, their theories tend to change a lot all the time. They say that what they call civilized man just came into being about 3 to 4 thousand years ago. They think they're civilized. They call themselves civilized. Anyway, related knowledge gives us different information that Charles Darwin and others were not descended from monkeys, but that the world was created by design. That actually God didn't directly create the world, but He does it through His agents. And there are cycles of time: creation, maintenance, and then destruction of the universe, and then again creation. And that from the very beginning of the creation, there are civilized, highly civilized human beings, and there have been very high levels of civilization, much more so than the present animalistic society, for many millions of years in this world. So, as I was saying, in previous ages, we wouldn't have been considered even fit for performing this bhakti, for taking up any kind of yoga, because although we may consider ourselves to be the doyen of civilization, or the highest summit of civilization, according to the Vedic understanding, especially in the way modern life is lived, people are most uncivilized. And this modern civilization that promotes meat-eating, gambling, intoxication, and illicit sex is practically subhuman, according to the Vedic standards. There is no higher goal of life, and people, as I said, are living practically less than animals. So in previous ages, in the Vedic culture, people lived at a very highly sophisticated life. By sophisticated, I don't mean that they had, Ray-Ban sunglasses and BMW cars, but they had a very high philosophical purpose of life and led a very sense-controlled life with the aim of developing spiritual knowledge for the sake of self-realization. And in previous ages, people used to perform meditation for the sake of God-realization. By meditation, I don't mean this kind of cheating, bogus meditation that is often advertised in the Western countries. People do a few minutes so-called meditation in the morning before drinking their coffee and going off to work. But this meant meditation, very deep meditation with severe austerities, carried on sometimes even for thousands of years. Because in previous ages, they would live even for many thousands of years. Even today there are many yogis in India who, by controlling their breath, can live for many hundreds of years. So people are used to live very controlled. But in the present age, this is called Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, in which day by day all your qualities of human beings decrease. So it's not a very suitable age for performing meditation or severe austerity. Neither are our lives long enough, nor are we capable of performing such severe austerities, nor are we capable of fixing the mind in the way that people could previously. So like I was saying, to follow the pristine process of God-realization, that is not very practicable for the modern age. However, the compilers of the Vedic literature, they have seen because they can see past, present, and future. They could see the future situation of future in the age of coming. And they are given a process of advanced God realization that can be taken up even by people coming from the most uncivilized kind of background like all of us. That process is based on chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. As I was saying at the beginning of the lecture, the whole purpose of discussing this Vedic philosophy is to encourage us to chant Hare Krishna. The Hare Krishna mantra is very pleasing. You can see you're all chanting very enthusiastically and joyfully. So it's natural that we like to chant Hare Krishna because we are all spiritual beings by nature. And chanting Hare Krishna puts us in touch with our spiritual nature, or more explicitly brings us into contact with Krishna, who is the reservoir of spiritual pleasure. However, when we first chant Hare Krishna, we usually don't understand why it is that we like it. And without understanding why chanting Hare Krishna is nice, we may mistake it for other things that we find nice. But different people in this world take pleasure in different kinds of things. Some people take pleasure in drinking alcohol. Some people take pleasure in sports and physical fitness. Some people take pleasure in watching TV. Or maybe many people take pleasure in all these things to different degrees. So if we're chanting Hare Krishna and we like that, we may think, well, that's nice, but then, you know, watching TV and drinking some wine, that's also nice. It's all more or less the same. But actually, the real pleasure of chanting Hare Krishna is to be experienced when one becomes completely purified. And the chanting in itself is purified. By chanting, if you go on chanting more and more and more, then we come to more and more higher levels of God realization. And the need for that can be understood by someone who understands the philosophical purpose of life. So actually this Krishna consciousness is a very serious movement. Often people, when they see us, they see that we're dressed in what they may consider to be exotic clothes, playing Indian musical instruments. The Ganga must have been made in some... Yeah, this drum was made in a village in Bengal. And someone sitting on a cane mat on the floor, stretching the straps by hand, selecting the exact kind of clay. It's an age-old tradition. So that is how we're using it here. So we may consider, and we see there's nice flowers and nice singing. And so we may consider, well, Hare Krishna people, something very happy, exotic, but may not understand the depth and seriousness of the philosophy behind this. Krishna consciousness is certainly happy, but it's not frivolous or foolish. It is based on understanding of the deepest need of all living beings. That deepest need is to understand our relationship with God, Krishna. So this is actually a very elaborate philosophy. The basic principles of it are very simple. Anyone can understand that we are living spiritual beings. We are not the body. The body is temporary, but I am a spiritual being. I am eternal. And I have an eternal relationship with the supreme eternal being, who is God, Krishna. Material life sins. Therefore, any intelligent person should not act for material sense enjoyment, which is simply a cause of suffering, but should act in such a way that he can develop his spiritual consciousness, or Krishna consciousness. And again, that process is based on chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So these basic teachings of Krishna consciousness, they are simple and straightforward. But anyone who is serious to advance in Krishna consciousness, they must certainly try to understand the philosophy in all detail. And in fact, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is the deepest and most precise in all the world. It exactly describes who is God, how he exists, what he looks like, what is our relationship with him, what is the relationship between God and the material world, why is there suffering in this world, and how to get free from it eternally. So all these and all kinds of different knowledge are described in the literature. And it behooves a person who is serious about perfecting his life to understand this philosophy. Therefore, we are requesting you to take these books. Some people are walking away, it seems they don't have much taste for philosophy. People in the modern age, they're used to TV and rock music, instant coffee. They want everything instant and all the time some kind of adrenaline-boosting kicks. They're not used to anything, some gravity. So Krishna consciousness is for people who are beyond the superficiality of simply living for cakes, who prepare to take time and trouble to go more deeply into the meaning of life. So for that purpose, the Krishna Conscious Movement is producing authorized translations of the ancient Vedic scriptures from Sanskrit into the various languages of the world. We have some of these books here in the local languages. So we invite you to take some of these books and study at home and try to understand what is the depth and the wealth of this Vedic philosophy. And for our devotees here who understand English, I also have a few of my books here in English. I've also been writing a few books which you might want to see. So anyway, Hare Krishna, thank you for listening very patiently. We're going to be chanting Hare Krishna some more, and we hope you'll also be chanting Hare Krishna. As I said, Krishna consciousness is also a very practical philosophy and way of life. One symptom of it being practical is that we have food for everybody, and not just ordinary food, vegetarian food. Not just ordinary vegetarian food either. This is food offered to Krishna, so it gives an effect more powerful than LSD. It gives love of love. The highest high. It's also addictive. Anyone who takes this wonderful vegetarian food off to Krishna, they always want to take more. It is not harmful in the slightest. The only side effects are that it makes you have no headaches after. So we'll be distributing that afterwards. In the meantime, if there are any questions, please put them now. No questions? Yeah. Generally, we think that civilized means to have motor cars and telecommunications and all these things. But as has been seen very clearly in this country, despite having all these things, people can act in the most barbaric manner. So real civilization means development of higher consciousness. Otherwise, if we simply develop technology but we don't develop higher consciousness, then we may become sophisticated animals. So this is the criterion. Development of higher consciousness is a good proposition. Without development of higher consciousness, all this technology, we'll simply use it to degrade our consciousness. We see that in the modern age, that despite having so much developed technology, man is more frustrated and society is more unstable than any time in what is called known history. In the capitals of the supposedly most developed countries of the world, like London, the big cities like London, New York, Los Angeles, but people don't feel safe to walk on the streets. Real civilization means to develop saintly qualities. For that there is a whole culture, freedom culture. Well, the chanting is the basis, but we have to really develop in higher consciousness, we have to adopt other principles that will support the change, or rather that will help to stabilize us in the process of change. So, some basic principles that serious chanters of Hare Krishna follow are no meat eating, no gambling, no drugs, and no intoxication. Because these activities all disturb and degrade the consciousness. There are many other principles also. In the beginning, we simply encourage you, please chant Hare Krishna. And try to understand this philosophy. And if we get some taste in chanting Hare Krishna, then naturally we will feel attracted to following these principles. What all these basic principles are and how to follow them, I have one book here in English, in translation. If you understand English, that describes how to take up the basic principles of Krishna. You can also find out from asking the devotees, you'll probably have to think. Alright. Well, we've talked quite a lot about chanting Hare Krishna and about how chanting Hare Krishna is going. There's something else that goes along with the chanting that's also very nice, namely dancing. Dancing is the highest ecstatic stage of love. Maybe you know the German so-called philosopher Nietzsche said that he facetiously said, I could believe in a God if he danced, euthanasia. Because in the Western world, well, in the Christian concept, he's from the Christian country, so in the Christian concept, as Michelangelo has painted, God is an angry old man sitting on a cloud, looking down and punishing everybody on earth. So Nietzsche rejected the idea of such a God and said, I could believe in a God if he danced. So he doesn't know that actually God does dance. The main thing he does is with all his devotees in the spiritual world, dance of ecstasy. So in the Krishna conscious movement, dancing is an important part. Now often we find that people are a little shy to dance unless they're from the least half of body, whatever it is. But in Krishna conscious we have dancing without alcohol and without any bad side effects.